It's the Brotherly Love Podcast. Welcome back to another episode, Anchor.fm, all of your podcast platforms, with the legendary and the one and only John Mita. I am Joe O'Donnell. Johnny Mita, we've got a great show for the folks today. We've got an interview guest. Sound the alarm. Sound the horn.
Yeah, ring, 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 ring.
I like that. I like that. You know what I do miss, though? I do miss the days when I would be in the studio in Iowa. I would be able to fire off sound effects.
I agree, man.
Now it takes too much work. Now I got to be like, Johnny Wayne, sound the alarms. And we'd have to pause. And then what they call post-production, I'd have to add in some horn sounds. But we're going to have Brian Broaddus join us. Don't know the name? Well, pretty important figure from the Birds back in the day. He's former NFL scout. Works now at 105.3 FM, The Fan in Dallas. I know Dallas sucks. We get it. But this guy helped run the 1998 Eagles draft, which netted them several great players in franchise history, including Jeremiah Trotter and, of course, longtime offensive tackle Trey Thomas. Alan Rossum was also part of that class, Ike Reese. So really out of like their five or six picks they had, John Mita, they hit on almost all of them that year.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, Trey Thomas, one of the best left tackles in the NFL, had like a 13-year career. Jeremiah Trotter was arguably a top five middle linebacker throughout his career until the injury bug with his knees kind of caught up to him. And then you have Ike Reese, who essentially was, you know, maybe go down as the best special teams player in Eagles history. I mean, you can make that argument. So anytime you can get, you know, I'm of the opinion of anytime you can get 3 to 4 starters out of a draft, I think it's a home run.
Yeah. So we're going to chat with Brian Broaddus again, working now on a Dallas radio station on a show called G-Bag Nation that airs weekdays from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central Time. It's kind of a unique concept. They've got like five guys in a room, and it's basically like hanging out with your buddies and talking sports. But I was in their studio. I was at their offices, at their studios, when the Wild were playing the Dallas Stars, and they had me come on to chat about the Minnesota Wild. I did it in studio because the program director at 105.3 FM in Dallas is Gavin Spittle, who I used to work for in Houston when I did some sports talk radio stuff at Sports Radio 610. So Gavin had me come in. He said, hey, the afternoon guys want to chat. And before we got on air, or before I got on air with him, Brian was like, oh, Philadelphia, like I used to work for the Eagles. I scouted in the NFL. And so this is a guy that has scouted more than, you know, like, I don't know, what he say, like 12, 14 years in the NFL between scouting and personnel work with a couple different organizations, the Packers. So he knows the Andy Reid story and that whole pipeline, the Eagles, the Jaguars. And now he's been in media for almost as long. So this is a guy with a ton of knowledge on the NFC East. We'll talk with him about the NFC East. We'll chat with him about this Eagles most recent draft and what he makes of it. I'll ask him about Bijan Robinson as well and what he thinks of that stud running back who the Falcons snatched up. And then we'll spend some time going down memory lane and chatting about the 1998 draft. So really excited for that. Our first guest in a while and a great interview coming your way. We're also going to chat about the Sixers and the hiring of Nick Nurse. The Flyers made a big trade, but we also need to get to, and we kind of tied this all together nicely here, I think, get your official kind of breakdown of the Eagles draft class, John Mita. We glossed over it. You used the word historic when we talked about it just briefly a few episodes back, but now we're going to get a little bit more in-depth take from you on that.
Yeah, it's it was pretty incredible. Obviously, the number one person on the Eagles draft board was Jalen Carter. Jalen Carter, defensive tackle from Georgia, kind of had an off-field, you know, tragic issue going on after the national championship, but arguably he might be the best player in the draft. Yeah. And what the Eagles were able to do is, you know, he didn't have a good pro day workout. That might have dropped his stock a little bit. I really thought Seattle was going to jump up or somebody at five. The Eagles were in the 10 slot. They move up, they make a trade, one pickup with the Bears, and they nab their man. So I was like totally just through the moon sight because I watch a ton of college football, and if anyone has witnessed Georgia's 2020 or actually 2021 national championship team, that defense was historic. And so now they grab another player from Georgia to go along with Davis, to go along with N'Kobe Dean, and then they get Jalen Carter. So then the draft goes on. The news comes out about that fraudster Jonathan Gannon. What an idiot he is. We obtain another pick in the high 60s. We were drafting like in the 90s. That was great news. And then, so the Eagles are going along. So then their next pick is at 30. And a guy that I looked at, another type of edge rusher, that is pretty much the carbon copy of a guy like Hassan Reddick. That's the comparable, which I made, Daniel Jeremiah. What do I know? I'm just a guy that just geeks up on the weekends. But the Eagles, he falls to 30 and becomes a Philadelphia Eagle. It was a great moment for he and his family. N'Kobe Dean was actually in the room with them, and they nab another player from Georgia. Completely stoked. This guy's going to be a pass-rushing machine. And what I love about this draft so far is that Howie is basically, you know, replenishing the covers, so to speak. Fletcher Cox up in years, they re-signed him to a one-year deal. Boom, now you got Jalen Carter. Brandon Graham, older defensive end, he's probably not going to be a couple more years, maybe one to two. Boom, replenish him with Nolan Smith. Totally ecstatic. Then they get to their next draft pick, and they take a safety. This team has been in dire need of a young safety. I was very high on Kayvon Wiles. Hopefully, maybe this is his come out year, his come out party. But they take a kid by the name of Sidney Brown from the University of Illinois, who happens to be Ray Dittinger's entire sleeper of the draft. So if that gives you any excitement, that I know that type of, if Ray's coming out and saying, I get excited about that. He's a 5'11 safety. You know, he kind of reminds me of a couple different players. One comes to mind for me is the great Bob Colonel Sanders, the safety from Iowa who played for the Colts, was going to be a dynamic safety in the National Football League for years. He kind of had the injury bug catch up to him. But this kid has range. As a freshman, he started at corner, slot cornerback, and he's a safety. He's willing to come up in coverage, thump, support the run, and he's got great range. And he's got great ball skills. I think he had 6 interceptions last year. So he can play. Then we all know that there was a necessary need at the right guard position, because you're going to either send Cam Jurgens to the right guard, maybe go back to Jack Driscoll. And then they get an offensive lineman, Tyler Skeen from Alabama. Very versatile player. He can play guard. He can play tackle. He started his career at Vanderbilt. He was a defensive lineman at Vanderbilt. Then he transfers to Alabama, and we all know Jeff Stoutland can just make miracles. You know, and to quote the great Mark Zumoff, he can turn garbage into gold. Now, Tyler Skeen is not garbage. He's a big kid, and I like that pick. And then the one that really got me excited is on day 2 of the draft, I'm doing some errands in the morning, and I put the coverage on 5 minutes. And then you get word. The Eagles have just made a trade to move up to the 2nd pick in day 3, I believe it was. And who do they take? Again, in need of a young cornerback, somebody that can be groomed upon with 2 of the best corners of the game with Big Play Slay and James Bradbury. And they take my guy out of, I know, everyone, wait for it. Yes, the University of Georgia. Kalee Ringo, the kid's exceptional, good size, ran a 4.36 40, has great ball skills, had a pick 6 in the national championship against Alabama. He is a player. The beautiful thing with him, he's 20 years old, and he gets to learn. See, that's the other beautiful thing about this draft, Joe, is the fact that they have all these older players in place where if these young guys, if they really want to become great professionals and excel at the NFL level, they have the perfect role models and the perfect organization. Now, everybody worries about Jalen Carter character. Get it. But what a better room. What a better situation to come play with your friends, be familiar, and just have world-class veterans to get you ready for this level. So, in my opinion, like I said before, early in the opening, if you can nab 4 to 5 starters out of a draft, it's an absolute home run. All the national pundits, you look at every draft recap, every grade from every source, from the USA Today, from the Sporting News, to every public, ESPN, you name it, Fox, Everyone had the Eagles with an A-plus draft. And right now on paper, it certainly looks that way. But think about this. The Philadelphia Eagles now have five starters. I repeat, five starters from the best defense ever assembled in college football. So completely stoked about the draft. I thought it was a home run. I can't wait to see these guys play. I think they're all going to get significant time. You know, through the all-season workouts, it looks like N'Kobe Dean's going to be your middle linebacker, and you give him his two big friends up front to basically keep him clean and make him let plays. And then you have Slay and Bradbury to teach Kalee Ringo. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if we finally land a corner that can play 10 years in the league? The last time we drafted a corner that could play in the league was Sheldon Brown and Lito Shepard. And I hate to say it, but that was so 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So all in all, I think the draft was great. Howie just blew me away again. I mean, for years, everyone knows that I was very critical with some of the picks. The Jalen Reagor for Justin Jefferson, I literally went to break my television set down in Florida. It did not happen, but he has really, these last couple years, he has done great work. And I think these are the types of drafts that prolong the stability and the dominance of to be a contender every year. And that's what we're looking for. And who's to say, honestly, Joe, this roster, as much as I thought last year's roster was maybe one of the best ever assembled, if they win the Super Bowl, you can make an argument that it was maybe one of the best rosters of all time. Who's to say that this roster might not be even better?
Well, I like the youth. I like the personality and dare I use the term swagger, because we haven't seen these guys play yet, of these young defensive players, but they seem like they want to hit. They want to be physical. You mentioned the athleticism and the range, some of these guys. So I'm excited to see it all come together. Might take a little time, new defensive coordinator, new pieces, but there's a youth movement on defense on that D side of the football. And I'm excited about that, to be honest. So good stuff, Johnny Mead. It was a long overdue, but glad you're able to break it down.
Yeah. And I also like, too, you know, how he's getting the input for some of his players. I mean, I'm sure N'Kobe Dean and Davis and, I mean, I'm sure they're instrumental. Like, hey, you got to draft this guy. You got to draft this guy. Oh, my God. We can't believe Kalee Ringo fell. Go up and get him. So I love it. And these guys, you know, they have something to prove. You know, a lot of times they come into this league and they're like, well, you were great in college. You were the best defense in college football. What can you do at this level? So I'm so excited. I wish football season started tomorrow, because I think this is going to be great. So.
All right. Good stuff.
And the other thing real quick. The new defensive coordinator, Sean Desai, everything that I've read about the guy, everything that I've seen through the interview process when he's been interviewed, the one thing that sticks out the most is that he is a great teacher of young guys. And that's what we have in this room right now.
Love it. All right, we got to move on to the Sixers. They hire Nick Nurse, championship-winning coach from a couple years back with the Raptors. Obviously has a history of some recent playoff battles against the Sixers while he was with Toronto. What do you make of the Nick Nurse hiring? And then James Harden, will he return? My quick thought on that is I sure as hell hope not. Take care, comb your hair. And I think if I had to say, will he, right? I've said I don't hope he will, but will he return or will he go maybe to Houston? I think ultimately he ends up with the Rockets. And again, I don't want him back, especially if he's torn at all, as that recent report said, or, you know, on money. I just don't want him. And so I think he'll ultimately take the money and run, go down to Houston and round out his career.
Well, then there's that. And then there's a rumor that sprinkled out last night is that the fact that the Phoenix Suns might have some interest.
That's so fine, too. Because I would love to bring Chris Paul into Philly.
And I'm with you, Joe. I mean, you know, Chris Paul, it's a bit of an older Band-Aid, but listen, I think we've seen what we can get, the best out of Harden. He's only getting older, and I just don't want to commit to a bad contract. You look
– right.
And listen, Tobias Harris, very nice player, great guy, great
whatever. Get
him
out of town. Free up that money.
But, again, at the time, you know, that's not a great contract. Now it's certainly this offseason, and maybe, you know, next year it'll be completely movable, but – I'm with you. I think we need to see how much more Tyrese Maxey can grow. And I'd like to see some other players and see what happens. So,
what about Nick Nurse?
Nick Nurse, for me, number one candidate on my board. There's a couple things that I like about Nick Nurse, and just hearing an interview with the old great Villanova player, Alvin Williams, he talked about, he had a conversation with Kyle Lowry and how that Kyle Lowry, he went over film with him. He basically holds his players accountable. So that's huge, right? I think that's big. When the news came out that Nick Nurse might be a candidate, there was a rumor out there that Joel Embiid, it was not high on his list. They've had, you know, some competitive battles back and forth, but he was a guy that was able to kind of lock down Joel a little bit. So why not bring in the guy that knew how to lock him down and maybe unlock him? Certainly a possibility. It looks like Nick Nurse took his, you know, basically his name out of the Milwaukee job. He's got familiarity with Daryl Morey when he was in Houston. So I'd like to hire. The other thing, Joe, that I like about Nick Nurse is the guy can make some on-the-fly adjustments. And you look at Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers made zero adjustments. And I think that's what cost us a trip to the finals, to be honest. So he's got the pedigree. You know, people like playing for a championship. Listen, Doc won a championship, you know, black ages ago, you know, many moons ago. But I like the hire. And I think people are going to want to play for him. He teaches tremendous defense. But let's see. We just need to find a new offense, a new identity. And
a new point guard, John Mita. They need a new point guard. And I don't know if Maxie's that guy ultimately, if he can be a number one point guard.
No,
people feel like he can't. But
all right. And there's, you know, there's a sprinkle rumor. Fred VanVleet might be on the market. And that was this guy in Toronto. And I've been a huge fan of Fred VanVleet. I mean, I used to watch him when he played for Virginia Commonwealth. I was a huge fan of his end. I mean, he didn't get drafted and he worked himself up, and now he's like a 20-point scorer, averaging 6-7 assists. So,
you know what I was thinking last night that I would really love? The timing just didn't work out. But, you know, you're looking for a point guard. Toby's coming off the books after this next season, right? Or they potentially move him. It's a shame that the Jalen Brunson contract didn't expire, say, after next season, because he'd be the perfect point guard to bring him home, as you like to say. And
absolutely,
and work and run an offense. It's run by a good coach with a big time center. Like I feel like that would be a perfect match, but unfortunately, obviously, that didn't work out.
And then again, another blunder by the goddamn Sixers for not drafting these kids out of Villanova. It's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, technically, they could have had Josh Hart, Mikal Bridges, and Brunson. They could have drafted them all they did draft Mikal. That's another story that makes me want to throw up. But anyway. But a good hire from the Sixers. Looking forward to it. And I'm definitely in your boat. I think I'm out on James Harden. You know, the only way I'd be in if he signed a one-year deal. But we need that money. So I don't care. See, what people don't realize, like, oh, you give up Harden, you can use his $40 to $50 million to sign another max player. It doesn't work like that. They can only sign a player for the mid-level exception, which will be about $12 million, and that's for 1 year. And then they can go out and try to get a max player.
Right.
So
they need assets too. So maybe a sign and trade. Maybe
sign and trade. And I mean, can you trade Toby? Exactly. So.
All right. To the Flyers. Let's move along here quickly on the Brotherly Love podcast. Big time trade. First of maybe a few from new GM Danny Briere.
I'm
sure new president Keith Jones was in on this as well. But Ivan Provorov gets shipped. It's a 3-team deal. Provorov goes to Columbus. The Blue Jackets send. Made another deal today, a sign-and-trade deal. Speaking of sign-and-trades with New Jersey, where they acquired Damon Severson, but that's for a different podcast on another time for a more hockey rabid group. But the Flyers get rid of Provorov. They get an intriguing prospect back who I haven't read too much about. Actually, I don't even have his name in front of me. Never heard of the guy, but I keep seeing in articles that he's an intriguing prospect. Obviously, they get the ability to get out from that Provorov contract. They bring in Sean Walker as well as a goaltender as well, and Cal Peterson, who's a Waterloo, Iowa native, made his way up to the NHL, was going to supplant Jonathan Quick in the Kings net at the start of last season, not this current season that's now in the Stanley Cup final. But it never really worked out for Peterson. He just, for whatever reason, struggled to find his way into really cementing himself as a number one. Eventually went to the minors this year, if I'm not mistaken. He's got a little bit. He and Sean Walker both have a little bit of term and price to them. I wouldn't say great contracts, but probably not abysmal contracts. But Sean Walker is a stay-at-home defenseman. He does move pretty well. He's coming off ACL surgery, but a gritty guy, shot blocker, physical. I think Flyers fans will like him from the little bit I know about him. But you get out from Provorov, and there's two things here. One, high maintenance, and not the greatest person. I think we've seen that from Provorov. And on top of that, his game really never took off to becoming a top four defenseman that every team coveted like it should have. And whatever happened there, who knows, but you get out from potentially long-term kind of just pain in the ass, if you're asking me, to be honest, on Ivan Provorov. So I like the move for the Flyers. They need, and they got draft picks too. It wasn't just that they got a struggling young goaltender and a kind of grinded out defenseman and a prospect. They got draft picks. And so the Flyers coming up this draft later this month in June, they'll have two first round picks, and they have two first round picks in next year's draft as well, if I read everything correctly. So you got four first rounders in the next 2 years. You can really start to build for the future with those type of assets. All in all, like the move in large part, because to me, it's addition by subtraction, getting rid of Provorov, not a great character guy, and really never became what we were all hoping he would be.
I mean, let's just come to the conclusion, right? The Flyers organization has been an absolute purgatory the last 3 to 5 years. So, you know, as much as people hate the process with the Sixers, this is going to take some time. And the only way for them to get better, to build it the right way, is basically through draft picks. And then essentially as you get better and as these guys come up through your system, when you're like a couple pieces away, it's hard with the NHL, Joe, and you know this because you are the hockey expert, but it's hard with the salary cap. You know, back in the day, you used to be able to go buy, you know, like shopping in a supermarket. Oh, what do we need? A forward. Oh, what do we need? A defense. You know, you can go out and buy it.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that because the salary cap is so tight. And so I love acquiring new assets. I love the direction with Keith Jones and Danny Briere working together. And the other thing is too, Joe, I don't think the Flyers are done making trades.
No, they're not.
Carter Hart, it looks like any day, any minute, we're going to get it, you know, the next trade. And it sucks, right? Because, like, I'm kind of – here's the deal. Like, we are like, oh, my God, Carter Hart. This is the goaltender that we seeked for 20 freaking years.
Yep.
Now we got the guy, but we're really not in the position to compete. So if you got a guy that's coveted and the one thing that I heard about both from Keith Jones and Danny Briere, just listen to Philadelphia Sports, is that the one position it sounds like that they're very high on in their farm system and – you know, everything else is goaltender. They have a couple of young Russian goaltenders that they're really high on. So if you can land first-round draft picks and get some decent, you know, get a decent haul with a Carter Hart trade, why wouldn't you do it? Because essentially, again, you'll get the goaltender. I mean, I know we say that now, but I just think maybe now it's time to just kind of, like you said, blow it up a little bit and then work our way back. Because I think their goal and mission, just from listening to both of these guys, Jonesy and Briere, is like, listen, Flyers fans, be patient, right? We all know about patience, especially Sixers fans, right? That was, you know, unformidable patience there. But they're going to do it the right way, and it's going to take a little time. But their mission and goal is to bring the orange and black where they're competitive and in contention and be contenders every single year. It's not let's become the 18, we're out of the playoffs. Then the next year, we don't make the playoffs. They don't want the seesaw anymore. They want to be able to be relevant and competitive for years to come. But it's going to take some time.
And let's not forget the Flyers had moved a lot of draft picks in recent years in acquiring players and moving. When they traded Gostisbehere, they moved, you know, draft picks for the Coyotes to take him, and that turned out to look like a poor deal. So they need to restock a little bit. They have some prospects coming. You mentioned the young goaltenders, but they've got some picks now. And I think that's huge. I mean, overall, in addition to the prospect, the defenseman Walker and the goaltender Peterson, they got a first rounder for this year. They got a second rounder for this year, and they got a second rounder next year. So they got three more draft picks in this deal alone to add to what they already had. Again, their own first rounder, which is seventh overall. So I'm wondering if they won't maybe take the Kings pick they got and the number seven and try and get into that top five. If there's a team that's a little bit on the fence about somebody, maybe they move out. Maybe the Flyers can end up nabbing one of these upper echelon guys in that top five of this year's draft. And I think for sure you're going to see Carter Hart moved. Well, maybe not for sure, but I think there's a good chance, especially with the draft, the GM sitting around those tables there. You always see draft day moves. Kevin Hayes is also going to get moved, even if they have to eat some of his salary. I don't think Kevin Hayes is on this roster to start next season.
No, and listen, and again, Flyer fans, don't be surprised if TK, Travis Connecting, gets dealt too.
That would be one that you could definitely – you should get a good return on. I just don't know if I'm ready to part with him. I think him and Lawton are two guys I would keep around for as long as you can, see if you can build around them. And maybe it's 3 years, but maybe by then, if they're, I don't want to say on the downside of their career, but they're more in their prime, back end of their prime of their career, where you have a chance to win. Phils are on a 5-game winning streak, but we don't have a lot of time to talk about them. If they beat the Dodgers, they win this series against the Dodgers, we'll see. Had a couple of near no-hitters with Nolan Wheeler going deep into games without giving up a hit last week or so. So that's been somewhat encouraging. But 5 in a row in the win column, much needed. They're still below 500. Shows you how piss poor they were. But let's get to our interview now, Johnny Mita. Brian Broaddus from 105.3 FM in Dallas, kind enough to join us. What an outstanding conversation coming your way. A lot to get to with a guy that, with Mike Lombardi, was running the Eagles draft back in 1998, spent a long time in the NFL. Here he is, Brian Broaddus. All right, Brian, thanks again for joining the program. Certainly excited to have you on with your Eagles ties, of course, but an eye on scouting and prospects, and my co-host John Mita. He loves to get his own little draft board going. The draft, of course, in the rearview mirror, but we haven't spent too much time talking about this past NFL draft. We thought you'd be a great person come on and join the program. So again, thank you very much for doing that. What did you make of the Eagles draft in particular?
Well, I'd tell you what, the great advantage that the Eagles have is they have a very aggressive general manager, and his ability to manipulate the draft, his ability to find value at certain levels of the draft, I think is tremendous. The ability to get multiple picks, to move back up wherever you have to go to make that work. I think that's the one thing that I really admire about, with what they do there. And, they found value throughout this draft. And, with the multiple picks, that they were able to address, the fact that they were looking at Nolan Smith potentially in the top 10, and then he fell to him in the back end. That, my experience of working in the NFL, and I've been doing it since 1992, was that good teams have good luck in drafts. Players fall to them. The Ravens have always had that happen to them. The Steelers have always had that ability for really good players to fall. And I can say a guy like Nolan Smith falls to him. Jalen Carter, is a tremendous pick. He was, he was one of the top players on a lot of people's boards. And then the information started to come out about him. He fell a little bit to their spot. And, I was really, Kelee Ringo, I thought, was a really good player. When I evaluate him, when you look at the size and, people were talking about him as a first, second round possibility, and to grab him in the fourth round, Tyler Steen, the tackle from Alabama. I mean, they've got a coach that's from Alabama. There's a lot of insight there, but if you look at it overall, I think they did a tremendous job of finding value and getting to where they needed to be to get the value.
I was very high on Kelee Ringo too. When the Eagles made the trade up for him, I was hoping that he was going to be the pick at that spot. So that's very encouraging to hear, because you just look at the tape, and that kind of leads me to the question. Like, when you're evaluating certain players, how much do you go off the combine? I would say, pro day workouts. And then the other thing is just overall tape. Is there an evaluation process where you weigh certain things more heavily in regards to scouting and evaluating a player?
Yeah, John, I think that to me there's – and I came from the system in Green Bay with the Packers and started in 92 with Ron Wolf. And even when I ran the draft with Mike Lombardi in Philadelphia in 98, I brought a lot of the same principles that we learned in Green Bay to Philadelphia, the evaluation of it. I'm a really, really big tape guy myself. I love watching tape. I'm a fan of also going to workouts, not so much for the numbers. I just like to watch, see how the players look physically and how they move. And I think these coaches do a really good job in these workouts. And, you know, to me, there's so much analytics now that is involved with scouting. And I'm like that old crusty guy that just kind of like, I'm not, you know, get off my lawn guy, but I'm learning about analytics. I'm learning about the numbers, but you know, we've always really dealt with numbers. I remember when I first went to the combine in 92 and we're collecting, you know, broad jump, vertical jump, shuttle times, 40 times. And, you know, those all things mean something because you use them as comparisons to other players. Like if you're trying to break ties within the round on certain players, well, hey, we have this guard here that can do this. Well, we have this edge that can do this. And, you know, you're like, well, he tested a little bit better. He interviewed a little bit better. But I think that a lot of scouts will tell you that watching that tape will tell you the story of these players and really the direction that you need to go.
Brian, had Bijan Robinson, I caught some an interview you did on the Giants YouTube channel and your yes. thoughts on Bijan Robinson. Had he been there at number 10, should, I don't know if they would have, but should the Eagles have taken him?
I'll tell you what, though, I would have loved to have been in that spot because that's kind of where I thought he was going to go. And I love Bijan Robinson, but this goes back again to I don't devalue running backs like people have. And I think it's a vital part of what you do offensively. And I know people say, well, look, Kansas City, Pacheco was a seventh-round pick, and look at the value they got out of that. But to me, Bijan Robinson, when you started to talk about, and this goes all the way back to, like, I start looking at players December 1st, and Bijan Robinson was one of the first players that I studied. And I just remember thinking, you know, I go, this is a top three player on my mind. He never moved. That thought about him never moved. I was looking for others, you know, I was looking for the Jalen Carters and others like that to displace him. And I just couldn't find it. He's just too valuable of a player. And the Eagles do a tremendous job with their running backs. I mean, they do it by committee. They went out and they get Penny. They go out and get Swift. You know, that Boston Scott is on the roster. Gainwell's on the roster. You know, they've got players that are very capable of being outstanding running backs. I just felt like going into the draft that Bijan Robinson was rare. And, you know, the Atlanta Falcons have made a couple of picks, you know, with drafting the tight end and then also drafting Robinson, where you kind of feel like that's probably not the best value of a pick, but they went out and really did take the best player on their board, I believe.
Do you wait conferences? I know as Philadelphia Eagles fans, we're like, do not draft players from the Pac-12 because, you know, some of the selections yeah. that we have been pretty sure. unsuccessful. And we're always like crying at the rooftops, like, go to the SEC. These are the most pro-level players. Do you put any weight into certain conferences when evaluating players?
I'll tell you what, that's a great question. It seems like Georgia is the Georgia and Alabama. If you're going to draft from two teams, and this is coming from a man that went to school at LSU, so I know all about yeah. this SEC and what Georgia, matter of fact, Georgia just slapped us around in the conference championship game. So, yeah, any players from Georgia and Alabama, I'm fully on board with drafting. But there was an old saying. I remember when I first started, we were competing against Buffalo, and they had Bill Polian as their general manager. And I remember Bill Polian was always interested in drafting, like, smaller school players. I mean, Andre Reed and guys like that, you know, the Don Beebe's, people that, you know, were just smaller school players. Now, he had a couple, like, you know, he had Cornelius Bennett's. I know that was a Colts, and, you know, but he always, you know, those were some big players that he eventually had. But I just remember my boss again, Ron Wolf, with the Packers going, hey, these guys better walk on water if they're going to come from a small school. We always took a big school mentality when it went into the draft. We felt like the players from Michigan and Ohio State and Florida State and Alabama and Georgia, you know, the competition level. But the way when scholarship limitations came in, you know, and the way that players now move around, you know, you're going to get players that they don't have an opportunity. I mean, I'm just going to give you an example of a guy here with the Dallas Cowboys. This guy named Deron Bland, who went to school at Fresno State. Now, Fresno is not a little program, but it's not Michigan and it's not Ohio State. But, you know, here's a guy that probably should have ended up at a Pac-12 school, should have ended up at UCLA or Washington or Oregon, one of those places, but he ends up at Fresno. So these evaluators miss on players too. There's sometimes guys just can't get to those big schools. And that's why, you know, you look at Jackson State, you know, they produced Walter Payton, you know, Mississippi Valley produced Jerry Rice. If they're out there playing football, you have to be ready to take them regardless of where their address is at that time.
What players that you drafted did you basically thought in your mind, we got a player that's going to translate to the next level? And are there any players that you really thought, because I mean, just because I'm such a draft nerd, I'm like, thought this guy would be a great pro. A lot of time turns out he is a great pro. And then there's other guys that I'm totally dead wrong on.
Yeah. Welcome to the world of scouting. You know, you remember your Joey Harringtons more than you remember your Pat Mahomes. Trust me on that. You know, if I could go back, I know it was a long time ago, but I know we're a Philadelphia-based podcast here. You know, I just remember the 98 draft, and I know it's a long time ago, and Eagle fans are probably going, what's this guy even talking about? But, you know, it's there's a couple of things I felt like that I really helped the Philadelphia Eagles with. And, you know, when we drafted Trey Thomas out of Florida State, you know, in that 98 draft, we traded for Hugh Douglas, and then we took Jeremiah Trotter and Ike Reese and guys like that. We kind of built the foundation, you know, and I also, you know, I worked in Green Bay with Andy Reid. We were trying to hire Andy in Philadelphia's offensive coordinator when John Gruden left. And, you know, I was neighbors with Andy. I'm friends with Andy. I'm still friends with Andy to this day. And, you know, Jeff Lurie and Joe Banner at the time, they didn't know who Andy Reid was. And, you know, we're trying to, I'm just going on and on about Andy and why you need to hire him and all that. But what happened was the draft we had in 98 led to Andy being hired. I was gone. Mike and I got let go. You know, Tom Modrak was brought in. And, you know, Mike and I never got to see our draft through. But we felt like we did the right thing for the Eagles at the time of taking Thomas and Trotter and Ike Reese and guys like that that made a difference. And then it led them to where they were able to then, you know, draft Donovan McNabb and players like that. And, you know, Andy did a great job and, you know, of coming in and having an idea of the type of player that he wanted. And those are the things that kind of make you, you know, it makes you feel like you were doing things the right way, because systematically it set the Eagles up to where they had dominance in the NFC East all through really the Andy Reid administration there, you know, just because of the players that we took in 1998, it gave them a good foundation to be able to go forward, you know, and that's the thing I'm really the most proud about. I've been fortunate to be on a Super Bowl team in 96 that won, you know, have a Super Bowl ring, but I am most proud of the work we did in Philadelphia. Even today, when I see Jeff Lurie, you know, he thanks me for doing that, for helping. And I took a lot of pride in that. And Mike took a lot of pride in that. But those are the types of things when you're going into a draft, you're just thinking, how can I help this franchise going forward? How can I help them? How can I get these players that can be difference makers? And those guys all ended up being difference makers. And like I say, I think it set the Eagles up for a long run.
Brian, you're crazy if you didn't think we wanted to go down memory lane with you. when we met that day in Dallas,
yeah,
on your show there on 105.3 The Fan, and you started to tell me about drafting Trotter and Trey Thomas and your work with the Birds. I was like, yeah, I need to talk more to this guy. And I immediately called John, like, I don't know, within a day. And I'm like, hey, I met this guy the other day in Dallas. He's going to be perfect to go down memory lane. I mean, we, after all, there's only one Super Bowl in that trophy case. So sometimes we got to relive the oh so close glory days. So with that in mind, on that draft, you know, Trey Thomas, Jeremiah Trotter, Ike Reese, 9 total Pro Bowl selections from that draft. I mean, when you guys left the room that day, were you like, we did our job? Was there any doubt?
Well, I'll tell you what, Joe, it was, and thank you for wanting to go down memory lane. I appreciate you. And by the way, you're one of the best guests we've ever had on our show. That your knowledge of hockey and what you bring to the table is quite impressive. You helped our audience to learn a lot about the Minnesota Wild that time, and we thank you for that. The thing that I remember the most is that walking out of there, that we didn't reach on any players. You know, we didn't. It was the way the draft fell to us was just like we planned out, and I was very fortunate. It was unfortunate for one reason that, you know, Dick Daniels, who was director of football operations, lost his job. But, you know, fortunate for me and Mike Lombardi that we were able to pick up the pieces. Now half the scouting department left. But, you know, there were guys like Mark Ross who went on. Now you can watch NFL Network and see Mark Ross on TV. You know, at the time, Mark was a young grad from Penn, and he, you know, had not been in scouting. I mean, it was his first year, him, Dan Shonka, and Jake Hollum. It was really us four that put together that board. All the other scouts quit. And I'd never been in that situation before where all the scouts were so interested in working for the guy who just got let go. But the ones that stayed, I basically, you know, was like, I can't thank them enough for staying, you know, for helping us put together that board. And, you know, Mike and I went a whole year without even talking to the defensive staff. You know, it was very hard because they were very loyal to Dick Daniels. And, you know, they really weren't interested in me and Mike coming in and changing anything up. And so it was, I just remember going in there and just begging the defensive staff to please give us a chance. You know, please, I gotta work with you guys. If we're going to do this, I got to know what kind of players you want. And, you know, that was the thing that, you know, Emmett Thomas, he was a defensive coordinator at the time. And, you know, he looked at me in the eye and said, okay, I'll work with you. We'll work with you. And, you know, I went a whole football season without ever talking to a defensive coach.
Wow.
And it was maddening to me, you know, and I knew that they weren't happy with us. I knew they didn't like us. And, you know, when Jeff and Joe put us in charge of the draft, I'm thinking, okay, this could be a big, big, big problem. And, you know, but they worked with me, Emmett and the staff, you know, Joe Witt, those guys, they all worked with me. And the players that we picked were because the three other scouts, myself, and then also the coaches, the job that they did, really, and we all walked out of the room feeling like we got the right players. But, you know, what happened, that staff didn't get the benefit from it, you know, the next year. I went to Jacksonville, Ray stayed on, and then they had a bad year. And then that's when Andy came in. But, you know, it when we walked out of the room, we felt like that we did the right thing. It wasn't any of this. You know, there's times where you sit there and you're like, you know, you're like, everybody's happy about the draft and you're like, damn, we missed on this guy, or we could have got that guy. I wasn't aggressive enough to go get. But the way the board just fell to us, we really didn't have to do anything but pick the best player on our board. And that's exactly what we did. And anytime you can do that, you're going to have a really, really good draft. And I'm proud of those guys. I'm, like I say, the Trey Thomases, the Jeremiah Trotters. I'm glad Jeremiah Trotter's son's playing at Clemson now. I can't wait to evaluate him. You know, I got to evaluate his dad, so I can't wait to evaluate him and go through all that.
How did the Hugh Douglas trade come about?
That was an interesting one. And it was funny because Mike Lombardi had a relationship with Bill Parcells, and Parcells was running the Jets at the time. And Mike came into, at the time we're at the vet, and Mike comes into the draft room, which was like my office, and we're kind of putting the board together, and Mike sits down and he looks at me and he goes, "Hey, we have a chance to get Hugh Douglas for a second round pick." And I go, "Really?" And he goes, "Yeah." And we started looking at the board. We started looking at all the second round grades that we had on the board at the time. We were just going through player for player for player. And we determined that there was nobody on that board that was better than Hugh Douglas for our second round pick. And I told Mike, I'm like, "Man," I go, "you're helping the team if you go get Hugh Douglas. You're helping us right now." And he agreed, and him and Joe Banner, Joe went back and forth. He wasn't sure he wanted to give up the two. Mike was trying to, push Joe into doing it. Joe was kind of, him-hawing around a little bit about that. And Parcells basically put down an ultimatum. He said, "Hey, if you don't call me back by," I guess, "I'm getting ready to go to dinner." He goes, "You don't call me back after I'm done dinner, we're not doing this deal." And Mike just lost his grip at that point and just went, Joe and Mike went at it, and Joe let it happen. Joe let it happen. And, we sent the pick to the Jets. We got Hugh Douglas. Hugh played great for the Eagles. He really, really did. And so again, that's Mike being on the pro side, knowing a really good player, me working the college end of it, saying, "Hey, I don't think there's a player better up there than Hugh Douglas." And, it just worked out in a really good way for both parties. But it wasn't easy, guys. That one wasn't an easy one to do. But I'm just glad that Joe just gave leeway on the trade and allowed it to happen.
For years, as Eagles fans, we're like, I look at the league and I'm like, linebacker is a very crucial position. And you brought up Jeremiah Trotter's son, who I would love to see us maybe get our hands on next year, even though we do have N'Kobe Dean, who I'm a huge fan of, and I'm thankful.
You should be a fan of N'Kobe Dean. You should be a fan of him.
Do you think he's undersized as a lineman? Do you think he's going to be okay now that they drafted, two of his defensive tackles up front? He'll be able to play the spot in the middle, or do you think he could struggle? And he's best suited for the outside.
Yeah, all I know about N'Kobe Dean is every time I watch Georgia tape, he made like every single tackle. It was one of those, like, you're sitting there and you're like watching, like, "God, who is that guy? Who is that guy? Oh, that's that Dean kid. That's that Dean kid again." I'm not going to lie to you. I was shocked that he ended up going in the third round. And I think what happens is that he probably got it caught up in a size issue with the league and, the lack of height. There were some medical questions that were there as well that teams were having to go through. But I go back and I watch the tape, and he just made every single play. And, that was what was so impressive about him. I think sometimes you have to, where does he fit? I mean, I remember a guy like Roquan Smith, who the Bears took, and, everybody's like, "Oh, he's too short. He's too," but he's making every single tackle, guys. He's not playing. I mean, he's playing against, he's playing against Alabama. He's playing against Florida. He's playing against, Tennessee. He's playing these games where we're looking at these guys, these offensive linemen, to draft all high, and he's beating their blocks, he's making plays, and so he can't do that in the NFL. He's playing against probably better competition in some regards than some of the teams he's going to play against in the NFL. I think N'Kobe Dean is going to be an outstanding player for the Eagles. I think they have a good idea what they want to do scheme wise. We'll see with the new coordinator being there. But I'll tell you what, though, he is a hell of a football player, and I think he's going to be just fine.
Listen, you did a phenomenal job in that 98 draft. I'm a huge Randy Moss fan. I was coming out of college. Was there any consideration for him at the pick? It was kind of one of those TV moments where, listen, Trey Thomas, phenomenal Pro Bowl player, to get a left tackle to play for 13 years. But was there any consideration of taking him at that spot? Or were you guys going to trade back?
Yeah, you guys are catching me at the absolute right time in my life to talk about these things. So the thing with Randy Moss is that we had a security director at the Eagles at the time, and Butchie was really good at figuring out stuff, and so we did some extensive work on Randy Moss. And because we were in a spot where we very well could have taken Randy Moss. And we talked about Randy Moss a bunch. Randy Moss was one of the best players on our board. And a few days before the draft, Mr. Lurie walked in, Jeff Lurie walked in. And he looked at me and he says, "Brian, I just don't feel we could take Randy Moss." And I said, "Okay, Mr. Lurie." So I walked him down to the end of the board where the receivers were, and I pointed at Randy Moss's tag, and I said, "Mr. Lurie, he's our number one wide receiver." And he said, "Brian, I'm just sorry. I don't think we could take Randy Moss here. I just don't." And I'm like, "Is it what we're hearing, what you know?" And he goes, "Just the reports, just all the reports." He goes, "I just don't feel comfortable with it." And I said, "Sir, I'm totally cool with that." And he goes, "Trust me." He goes, "If it ever comes down to it, I'll admit that I was the one that pulled him off the board." And I said, "You know what, Mr. Lurie, that's, you know, it's your team, sir. And if that's what we want to do and need to do, we'll pull him off the board." So we took his tag off the board that day. And I made a note. I still have my draft board, my laminated draft board with the note on the bottom, "Randy Moss off board." I had it down on the bottom of my, I wrote it in Sharpie on my board. I still have it to this day. And but that's a conversation we had. Now, I will say this, Jeff Lurie was the reason that we drafted Jeremiah Trotter. And I'll say it in this way, because Jeremiah Trotter had a bad knee, had a really bad knee. But, you know, it was one of those things where our team doctor said, you know, when we got together, the doctor says, "Guys, I don't know if he's going to play 10 games or 10 years, but this is where we're at." And to Jeff Lurie's credit, he said, "If we like this player this well, we need to draft him. I have no problem drafting him." And we made the third round pick for Jeremiah Trotter. But we lost Randy Moss, but because of how he felt, but we also gained Jeremiah Trotter because he was willing to roll the dice on a guy's knee. And, you know, that part of it did work out. So there was a lot of back and forth on these players, but to his wishes, you know, we pulled Randy off the board. And you know what? Jeremiah played a long time. Randy was a Hall of Fame player. You know, those are the kinds of things that happen to you. But I, like I say, the opportunity to even run that draft, to work that draft, I owe a lot to Jeff Lurie. I mean, that's his call on that player. You know, and I think it later came back to when even some of the decisions that later that he had to make about Michael Vick, you know, I think that might have, you know, some of the tough calls that he had to make early in his ownership maybe helped him to make some calls later in his ownership. Yeah. And I think that's
a point.
All you can ask is to kind of learn along the way.
Great story. I'd love to have had
Randy Moss, though. I really would have.
John Mita will not. John Mita will not. He will not sleep tonight. I can guarantee you that.
I tell you what, Jeff. You know, Mr. Lurie, Jeff Lurie. He was so great to work with. His wife at the time. If I could tell a real quick story about her, if you allow me, guys.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Okay. I will never forget. We were sitting there, getting ready to go on the clock, and Mrs. Lurie was sitting there. She was sitting next to me on the table, so it was myself, Mrs. Lurie, Mr. Lurie, Joe, Michael, Ray Rhodes. We're all sitting there, and it's just me. We're getting ready literally seconds before we go on the clock. And Mrs. Lurie leans over to me. Christine Lurie leans over to me and goes, "Hey, Brian, what did you think about the omelet station this morning?" And I go, "You know, ma'am, I didn't have the omelet, but the crepes were outstanding." So she had arranged like a chef to come from one of the downtown Philadelphia hotels to cook for us. and we had an omelet station, and the guy made me one of the best crepes I've ever had in my life before the draft. But she had this feel. She had this feel for how to just, it was, you know, it kind of everything's a little tense.
Yeah.
She just had this way, and, you know, dead silent draft room. Hey, Brian, what did you think about the omelet station today? And I just like leaned over and we just had a conversation right before we're going on the clock, and everybody's looking at us like, what the hell is going on here? Yeah.
Little breakfast talk.
That was the fun thing about working for the Lurys. There was
Brian, which pick was that? Do you remember?
It was the first pick.
Yeah.
It was the first. We're getting ready to go on the clock. I mean, we're getting ready for the first round pick. And, you know, we knew we were going to take Trey. And if you go back and look at the, you know, at the time, I think we had 15 minutes to hand in the pick. I think in that round, we were the quickest. We turned the card in faster than any other team in that round. Because, I mean, I'm sitting there at the phone. We're like, okay, let's see if the phone will ring, see if anybody wants one of our picks, wants this pick. And we're just sitting there for a couple of minutes, and the phone's not ringing. And I look at the guys in the room, Miss Lurie in the room, and I go, we know who we want here, right, guys? And I was like, yeah, let's go, yeah. I'm like, okay, well, you know, turn it in. And we turned the card in faster than anybody else in that round. Like, we didn't even take, like, we took, like, 6, 7, 8 minutes. We didn't even take the full time. We just handed the card in and went on our way and had the draft. But that was one of my fun stories about Mrs. Lurie. And I got to meet with her when I was leaving, when we got let go, and she closed the door and she said some of the nicest things ever about what, you know, we did there in a very, 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 very short time. So I'll always appreciate the Lurys and what they did for me.
All right, Brian, before we let you go again, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you guys for having me here. I appreciate being with you. I really do.
Been excellent.
I want you to size up the NFC East for us going into the season.
Yeah, Philadelphia is the best team. I think last year at this time that we were kind of saying that Dallas and Philadelphia's rosters were very similar. The difference was probably the quarterback. The homers and us in here in Dallas were thinking that Dak Prescott was probably better than Jalen Hurts at the time. And, you know, I mean, that was probably going to be the difference. And Jalen Hurts played like an MVP candidate really the entire season. They did a great job of managing him, managing the offense, the offensive line, the running game, going out and trading for A.J. Brown. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles have a legitimate roster that you have to deal with. And, you know, and the whole conference will have to deal with this roster. I think that Dallas is second. I mean, it's really – well, I'll say this, Dallas. I think the Commanders are a quarterback away from being somebody that we're going to all have to worry about within this division. I think defensively they're really good. I think their skill is really good. They've got depth at running back. I think they're a quarterback away. The Giants now found a general manager and a coach there that they honestly can hang a hat on. Their roster will get better. You know, but I think the division as a whole is very competitive. I think the Eagles are the best team in the division. I think the Cowboys, the Commanders, and the Giants are all kind of playing to try and maybe get into that second spot to potentially get into a wild card game. It could be a really interesting year of everybody just kind of beating up on each other. But I just feel like that the Eagles do have a little bit of a better roster now. And with the additions that they've made, Dallas has made some really good additions too. But now the difference will be the quarterback. And Jalen Hurts is playing at a very, very high level. And I think that's what gives them the nod, in my opinion.
Brian, again, thank you for your time. Really appreciate you joining us. You can find Brian on 105.3, The Fan down in Dallas, part of G-Bag Nation. Very interesting show, kind of a round table, almost like your basement with your buddies. A lot of hosts in that room, and you guys do a nice job there spreading all around. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Anytime you want to talk more Eagles football or Philadelphia, I've got opinions on everything in Philadelphia. I love living there. I love living there at 17th and Callow Hill. I was a downtown guy. So I figured out a lot of how to get around that city. I really did. I love it. I miss it. But thank you guys for giving me the opportunity, the platform to talk with you today.
Oh, thanks so much for joining us. And I know all the people, our resilient listeners, are really going to enjoy this interview, especially getting all the stories about the draft room. I think that's because we always want to know. I mean, I know another one for us was Earl Thomas, Brandon Graham. Like, was there consideration? Everyone in Philly was like, oh my God, here's the Brian Dawkins heir apparent. And then they're like, Brandon Graham. But
yeah. So.
Hey, he worked
another
out.
Another day,
but,
another time.
But the yeah, exactly. But the, you got
but,
it.
Hey, that one worked out, Johnny Mita, but the Justin Jefferson, sure. Jalen Reagor ones certainly did not.
That's
so.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. And especially, like I say, you know, with the fact with Justin Jefferson, that's my LSU guy right there. So I kind of was thinking, oh, please don't let him get this guy. Please don't let him get this guy. Kind of one of those things.
Yeah. So, thanks again,
thank
Brian.
Thank you guys again.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it. You too. Best of health.
All right, great stuff there from Brian. Really, really fun episode and show overall. Johnny Mita, real quick for you. I got an on the fly before we wrap it up. You ready?
Sure. Yeah.
I'm going to give you a little context here. Charles Barkley was just on the Spit and Chicklets. It's like an hour plus interview. It's unbelievable. One of the best interviews I've ever heard. I just saw breaking news. Get that breaking news sounder. Charles Barkley was just on the New Heights podcast with Jason and Travis Kelce.
Yeah,
That's going to be unbelievable. What a listen and watch or whatever you do. If you watch or you listen to your podcast, that I can't wait for that. So on the fly, John Mita.
Yeah.
Give me one interview guest you would love to land.
Oh, wow. Jesus. I mean, God, I mean, I'm such a huge fan of Charles. I even shifted our card off to him when I met him in Roach and O'Brien to come on the podcast sometime.
Wait, he has a Brotherly Love podcast business card somewhere in one of his suit coats, you're telling me? Back pocket 100%. Of his jeans?
My buddy Pat McDermott was bartending. He's like, Barkley's up here. This was like right before the Super Bowl. Yeah, I went in there, was talking shop with him. We were talking NBA, going back and forth. And I was like, listen, Charles, love that. Yes, he's got the card. It's probably stuck in his drawer in his place in Pennsylvania.
Probably in the recycling bin on the way out of Roachie's.
Yeah, either that. Yeah, exactly.
Why,
either
they probably don't recycle Roachie's, to be honest.
Yeah, so as far as, what a hell of a question to give.
All right,
me.
I'm going
to
answer it myself.
Yeah, you answer yourself. Yeah, Jesus.
And a guy that Charles Barkley knows pretty well, actually, I think I'd like to land the great one, Wayne Gretzky. I think chat with him, he seems like such a down-to-earth dude for being the great one. I'd love to just hear some stories and talk about his greatness. So I think Wayne Gretzky be one off the top of my head that I would love to chat with sometime, even if it's not an interview, even if it's just around a bar, you know, having a beer.
Yeah, that is a great one. I'm going to kind of you know who I like to interview? Probably my favorite basketball player of all time, David Robinson, a.k.a.
Wow.
The Admiral.
Okay.
The Admiral.
So we've had a Colonel drop and an Admiral drop.
Yeah. I mean,
you
David,
did love Bob Sanders, by the way. You always love Bob Sanders.
Oh, he's a huge
Bob Sanders guy.
5'11", little dynamo. He was unbelievable. Now, I would love to interview David Robinson just because, like, how he became my favorite player. I'll never forget it. I was literally in middle school, and people that don't remember this, and this magazine's probably not even published anymore, but Sports Illustrated for Kids. I literally read an interview with him and, you know, his background of being in the Navy and the Naval Academy, and just seeing him work out, and he was left-handed. And I just, after reading that article, he became my favorite player. And then I became a huge San Antonio Spurs fan for the longest. That some people might not know that. Those, my close friends know that. But then, you know, he just had such a prolific Hall of Fame career, won a lot of titles. Yeah, I mean, I had his sneakers. He was doing Nike commercials. They were called Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. He seems like a really stand-up guy. To interview him, I think, would be a true honor, even just to meet him. I got to meet, you know, one of my boyhood idols, my favorite, you know, baseball player. I get to get an autograph, a jersey signed by Frank Thomas. I got to meet him in New Jersey. That was an incredible moment for myself. So, yeah, David Robinson, that would be for me.
Your David Robinson story kind of some way sounds like my idolizing of Patrick Waugh, except you probably didn't end up hating the Sixers and rooting against them like I was.
Right.
Against the Flyers. But I digress. I'm surprised, and we got to wrap it up here, but I'm surprised you didn't say Brian Dawkins. But I like your Dave Robinson angle, and I will accept that answer, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Dawkins, I mean, another all-timer.
I don't think you end up interviewing him. I think he just preaches to you.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Johnny Meade, great stuff, man. Our thanks to Brian Brodus.
Great stuff out of you and Joe joining us. Thank you again for landing such a great interview. I really think the people really are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, so. Me too. It was really good stuff, and he said he'd come on again, and I hope he does because I'd love to chat with him about Andy Reid and Ray Rhodes and maybe a little bit more about Christina Lurie, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, this is what I live for. You know, one of my favorite moments was a friend of ours was on the Eagles practice squad, Sean Scott.
Yep.
And we went up to training camp one time at Lehigh and sat down with these professional football players and just talked sports and just got to know them as regular guys. It was one of my favorite moments that I'll never forget. And also John Runyon broke a chair in the restaurant, which was also pretty funny.
Oh, man. Good stuff. All right, Johnny Meade, enjoy the weekend, my friend. And
you got it. You too, pal. Soon.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Boy, I think I just saw we just cracked like 7,000 or 8,000 all-time clicks on the Brotherly Love podcast. So we're nearing 250 episodes. Who would have thought we'd ever get there? Thanks for all the support. Keep spreading the love. And as always, go Phils. Anybody else playing? No, I don't think so. And until next time, we'll see.